You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and we want to thank you for making us part of whatever it is that you're doing, taking us along with you on whatever ride that you're on. We're the Rain and Chase, and it's all three of us, John Corrales, Jay King, Sam Jam Packard. What's going on, boys?
It's the tripod, son.
Yeah, Kaizen to you, my brothers. Kaizen.
All right. We're going to talk about a few different things. We're going to talk about that crazy Houston game. We're going to address a few of the Al Horford haters. We got a big Australian boat coming up. But before we get to all of that, we want to just let everybody know that you should be subscribing to the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you are not a subscriber and this is your first time, welcome aboard. We hope you enjoy this ride. It's going to be a wild one. We're a little crazy. It's a Sunday night. We're doing the Monday show. Things get a little crazy when that happens. So go search for Locked On Celtics wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you are a subscriber, give us that 5-star rating. Give us a good review. Search for us on Twitter. I'm at Reds_Army_John. Jay King is at by Jay King. And Sam is at Jam Packard. You're going to get a lot of hot takes. You're going to get a lot of crazy stuff. You're going to get some weird Celtics Twitter involved in all of that. But, fellas, let's start off by talking about that game. A 123-120 win by the Houston Rockets. A crazy game that the Celtics had and blew, I guess. It's hard to say that in that game, with all of the back and forth, that any team blew it.
They blew it. Oh, they blew it.
The Celtics had an opportunity to win. There were three really bad turnovers down the stretch. But, look. It was still an amazing game. So let's talk a little bit about that game. Obviously the biggest story is the bench that came up huge. Rozier, Morris, Greg Monroe. You know, basically all three of those guys had three of their best games as Celtics.
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest story since the All-Star break, right? So yeah. Now five games, and for the most part, bench has been lights out. Marcus Smart came back. He's been great. Terry Rozier has now reached double figures in 13 straight games. Marcus Morris looks healthier, more mobile, and more efficient than he's been all season. Greg Monroe, the last two games, has completely reversed what he was during the first four or five games of his Celtics tenure. And everything just kind of makes sense right now. Even when Al Horford and Kyrie Irving go to the bench. Sometimes, especially when Kyrie Irving and Al Horford go to the bench, the Celtics have just been really good. They scored on, I think it was 12 straight possessions against the Rockets with a bench unit plus Jason Tatum, which was totally insane and probably pretty lucky. They were just hitting everything. But also, the fact that their second unit is scoring is a huge surprise because for the first half of the season, the second unit didn't do any scoring at all. Like when Kyrie Irving and Al Horford were on the bench, their offense just plummeted. And so it's a huge turn and a huge step in their evolution that all of a sudden that hasn't been an issue at all. And it's actually been a huge strength.
Yeah. And Marcus Smart, this is basically the first time we've seen the bench be completely healthy and we know exactly what it is. Just Marcus Smart returning the lineup obviously has had a positive impact, but Marcus Morris is really healthy for the first time this season. And then we got to see Greg from Moose from Greg have his best game as a Celtic. And Even though they lost, I'm going to go classic process over results here. They clearly didn't execute down the stretch. They had some dumb turnovers. Terry Rozier had a sky-high rebound, then got stripped by Chris Paul. Al Horford just fell over and couldn't get a timeout called, and then earlier before that just threw a pass to no one. There's some really bad moments down the stretch, which they're going to hopefully fix, but if you're just focusing on process, I guess, and seeing what the good things that they did, the fact that the bench can score with such efficiency is a great sign for the Celtics. I mean, playing against the Rockets, who are basically the clear second-best team in the NBA right now and are really challenging hard for the best team in the NBA, having won 15 straight at this point, for the Celtics to be able to hang with them for the entire game, you have to expect that Kyrie Irving's going to turn in a better performance than that. Jaylen Brown's going to turn in a better performance, and Al Horford's going to turn in a better performance. So the fact that the bench is playing so well and the bench was actually able to carry them in this victory, I think is just a good sign for their depth moving forward. And that the lineup is really like a solid 9 deep. We didn't even get any Daniel Tice in this game. It could have gone to 10, but just Morris, Monroe, Smart, and Rozier, I think, are an excellent kind of change of pace off the bench. For them to be able to score this well and for kind of Monroe to fit into the offense that kind of seamlessly and the way they're able to get him good looks, especially against kind of with Clint Capella on the bench, I think that's a great sign because that's exactly why you brought in Greg Monroe, is to kind of abuse backup bigs. And since the All-Star break, the Celtics bench has really been firing. So I'm going to Kaizen the shit out of this one and say good loss. It was a good loss. Like the loss to Golden State, this is probably one of the better best the Celtics have played this year.
Yeah, that loss to Golden State is the comparison, right? That's the Celtics went out and played extremely well for most of the game. And look, when you lose 123 to 120, I think the obvious question is, where's the defense? So yeah, the Celtics had three bad turnovers down the stretch, but they could have done more, I think, earlier in the game to maybe slow down the Rockets. And it's hard to slow down the Rockets. They're having an historically great offensive season. This, I think, statistically is the best offensive season in NBA history. So I don't want to get too crazy about giving up 123 points to them, but there are opportunities when you give up that many points and you score 120, the opportunities are on the defensive end. I will say that Jaylen Brown got screwed a little bit on the fouls. There was that one play where Harden literally hugged Jaylen Brown and then let him go. And somehow the foul was on Jaylen Brown, which I don't understand how that went. But
James Harden's a wily motherfucker, man. He's so good at drawing fouls that it's
he's an artist.
But you got to respect it.
True artist.
I'll just take your word for it.
Stat line. He was 6 of 18, 3 of 12, but 11 from 13 from three. Like that's, I mean, from the free throw.
No, I get it. That's his,
how the game was won.
All right, I'll repeat here what I said, and I've said it before, and I said it on Twitter last night. James Harden is clearly the MVP. He's having an amazing season. He is, I think, at times difficult to watch. I don't like watching his games. His highlights are amazing.
Oh, we got some James Harden takes today.
No, but look, who wants to see a guy shoot 13 fucking free throws? Come on. He shot 13 free. You say, like, come on, man. That's horrible. I don't want to sit there and watch a guy score more than half of his points from the line. That's boring. Like, him shooting the three, like, he's great. Getting to the line, getting to the rim sometimes is great, but watching him shoot free throws, complaining every time he doesn't get a call, like that's just it's a difficult to watch. I don't like watching James Harden, and that doesn't. I don't think I'm trying not to take away from the overall greatness because I'll take James Harden in a heartbeat, but I just don't like watching him.
All right, that's our James Harden hot take of the day. Celtics did some complaining too, although they got hit with some weird text. The Marcus Morris taunting tech,
weak.
I don't even know how much he said. It didn't look like much. And then Brad Stevens looked totally shocked when he picked up a technical foul. So I don't know what he said. I'm sure it was like shucks or something.
Brad swears a bunch. That's the thing. People, he has this ad, like ad, this persona. He's just a nice Midwestern boy, but I bet he said some things to some refs that he regrets, and I'm here for it.
But that time, I don't think from the way he reacted.
Oh, that time was just like
he didn't say much.
He was just like, yeah.
Yeah. Normally, he knows he deserved it, but
do you think he's ever going to get ejected from a game? Because I feel like
he's already been ejected.
I don't even recall.
He was ejected his first season in Sacramento.
Sacramento.
It was in Sacramento, and then he didn't know what to do. So before he left the court, he kind of like waved congratulations to whoever was the coach of the Kings at the time, and it was like the most awkward, hilarious Brad Stevens thing ever.
Courteous ejection.
I do remember that.
Ever.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he only got ejected with one tech.
He only got ejected with one tech?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a one tech ejection. It was I forget what happened and why he was ejected, but it was a one tech thing, and he was gone. It was a weird game. Gerald Wallace and DeMarcus Cousins were both just going wild, and then Brad Stevens somehow got chucked. I think the refs were like too afraid to chuck Boogie and maybe too afraid to chuck Gerald Wallace, and they were like, "Well, might as well send that coach
away. Might as well send Brad home."
Yeah.
I like your encyclopedic knowledge of past Celtics games. That's dope. Brad Stevens has yet to use the motivational ejection, though. Like when the team's down and they need a boost. I'm still waiting for him to play that card because I think it's in him. I think he knows he can ride the emotions enough. Maybe he can start speaking to Kyrie about the chakras and kind of read the aura of the room, because I still think he has it in him.
Yeah. One thing about the Rockets. They just launch threes, and obviously that's what they do. That's part of why they're one of the greatest offenses in NBA history. But it's really almost startling to see it. And like Eric Gordon was taking shots from so deep that Jason Tatum didn't really know how to react, and it was like they almost broke the Celtics defense because Jason Tatum was guarding Eric Gordon like a normal shooter. And Eric Gordon was like, "Oh yeah, I'll just shoot from 28, 29 feet. No big deal, man." And same thing with Harden. Like, he launches a ton of threes, and they just launch at the quickest opportunities. And I think that sometimes that's why they get offensive rebounds. Obviously, the big offensive rebound was the one Terry Rozier did not track down late in the game. And then I believe, what was it? Was it Ariza who hit a three after it? But that was a big one. And then that last 4 minutes was just sloppy, sloppy play from the Celtics. And from guys you don't expect sloppy play from. Kyrie misses a wide open layup. Not wide open, but it was pretty open layup that would have gone up 8. Rockets come back, hit a 3. Then Horford misses a wide open 3. Misses a tough runner. Gets his own rebound on the floor and just chucks it to the wrong team with no Celtics even close. 23 seconds left. It was like the Celtics kind of they lost it a little bit down the stretch, and I don't think that's concerning long term, because they normally execute well. That's always been something they've done. That's like when you get Kyrie Irving and Al Horford out there and it's a close game, you typically like your chances. But it was just that one night after some beautiful, beautiful basketball, they just kind of just dropped the ball. The last play, the Marcus Smart wildness. That was a fun play, man. Because
it was so close to going in.
Oh my god, that needed to go in. That would have been so amazing. Let me ask you guys before we move on to the Horford stuff. I like what you said, Jay, about Harden or the Rockets are playing in a way that's almost surprising to a team, because as you go through an 82 game season, you go from Houston, they're going to Houston, to Chicago, to Minnesota. They've got like different styles, and basically everybody just plays their defense against whatever team they're playing. You play your defense, and whatever happens, happens. You adjust on the fly, but you kind of just do your thing, and they do their thing, and you, whatever happens, happens. But if the Celtics, and now this wouldn't happen to the NBA until the NBA Finals, but let's just say if the Celtics or if any other team were facing the Rockets in the playoffs, do you think that the way they play can be defended? Like, instead of teams playing their own defense, can you sit there and say, well, they play a certain style that you can defend. You can just move out. You know that those guys are not going to take mid-range shots. So you defend an Eric Gordon further out, and he's going to drive. And then if he drives, he's just going to try to get all the way to the rim. He's not going to take a mid-range shot. Is this a team that when the playoffs come around, can they suddenly be defended better than they are now?
I think it's difficult to defend them with – we saw the – I think the thing that stands out to me is the Celtics' closing lineup to try and finish out that game was three guards, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, Kyrie Irving, and then Marcus Morris and Horford. And I think that's the kind of what you have to do. You have to go small, and you have to basically just defend your asses off on the perimeter. And I think they can be defended. It's just can a team defend their asses off on the perimeter and just basically like try and take away the three-point shot – and then also score with that lineup at the same rate that the Rockets are going to. That's the thing. I was fascinated that Jaylen Brown wasn't on the court, that Tatum wasn't on the court towards the end of that game. And I think it was strictly for defense. They were trying to get their kind of fastest, best defenders out there. But it's just a question of what you turn those guys around on the other end. Can they score and can they make the amount of threes that it takes to keep up with the Rockets? So I don't know. It's going to be interesting, and I'm really looking forward to Rockets Warriors because that's going to be a fascinating 7-game series whenever that happens.
And part of it too is just to have James Harden. You know, like James Harden is next level. He's probably going to win NBA MVP this year. That's just he's supremely talented, and especially the way teams are switching these days, like he's maybe the best isolation player in the league, and he's super strong, and he draws fouls, and he can hit pull-ups, and he has a green light from anywhere. And so it's going to be tough to guard them regardless of how dialed in you are. I do think a team like the Celtics that can switch so much and has so many mobile guys and so many plus defenders has, I don't want to say an advantage against a team like that. I think I said this the other night on our preview pod, but
Jay King nailed it. Jay he nailed it.
I nailed it, and then they gave up 123 points. So how much did I really nail it?
Enough in my book, man.
Yeah, not too much. But because they have so many guys who can switch and so many guys with length, that they do have a better chance of holding up against the Rockets than a lot of teams do. Because the Rockets, like, they just bend you until you break, man. It's wild to watch them play. They're a trip.
They are a trip.
Trevor Ariza shot 13 threes. That's just like he only made 4 of them like that. But just the fact that he has the freedom to shoot 13 threes is insane. PJ Tucker had 6 3-point attempts. They're just chucking out there. It was impressive.
Well, look, they took 87 shots. 49 of them were 3-pointers. So again, they took more threes than twos. So
That's how they teach it, though. Like I had a good friend who used to coach at their D League team, and they do not run a drill in the D League that's not a 3-pointer or a layup. Like there, it's an organizational wide philosophy. Like they will not run a mid range shooting drill. That's just not part of their operation.
And that's fine.
It's insane. But it's clearly working for them. Like that's the kind of player and system they're trying to develop.
This is my point, and I don't want to turn this into a Rockets podcast, but my point has been with the Rockets that they need to be a threat to shoot from the mid-range. And this is part of what I was getting at with how you defend them. Like the Celtics went into Houston and defended the Rockets the way they defend everybody. Just like Jay said, that Jason Tatum was kind of surprised, like, oh, God, why is he shooting from that far away? So in a 7-game series, you can game plan for that. You say, okay, remember that these guys shoot from this spot, so defend that spot. They also don't shoot from the mid-range, so you don't have to worry about rotating to a spot in the mid-range. You just, after you run them off the 3-point line, now you just pack the paint, and you change your rotations to be to pack the paint and challenge those shots. And we know that the referees don't blow the whistle the way they do in the regular season. So you're going to get away with a lot more. So a physical team like the Celtics or any team that wants to be physical can challenge the Rockets I feel like they have a serious risk of facing a different brand of basketball in the playoffs. And if they are not willing to take mid-range jumpers, then that mid-range game is going to be what softens up the defense. If they're not willing to take that, they're going to be in trouble. And everybody's going crazy about Houston. And that, like I said, they're having an historically good season. And they are the second best team in the NBA. And right now, people are trying to put them at the same level as the Warriors. I'm saying that you can game plan for the style of play that they have. And unless they have guys that just go completely nuts and they negate whatever game planning that you can do, which they do. Chris Paul and James Harden can kind of do that. But if they tail off at all, I feel like teams can game plan for that. And if they're not willing to adjust their offense, that the Rockets can be in, I don't want to say trouble necessarily, but it's not going to be as easy as it seems right now.
I think that's where Chris Paul comes in, though, because Chris Paul's like does. Lord of the mid-range, and I trust them if they're completely I feel like the Spurs last year really just tried to run them off the three-point line, and a lot of what you were saying came true in that Spurs series, but I think that's where the addition of Chris Paul makes it so the Rockets are that much more dangerous, because if anyone's just going to dominate pull up mid-range, that's Chris Paul. That's his entire game.
Yeah.
I agree. That's going to be, I think, the it's so weird that it comes down to Chris Paul, and if they fail, it's going to be interesting to see how Chris Paul gets the brunt of it.
Can I insert one more James Harden hot take?
Sure.
I don't think he should be the MVP.
Ooh.
And who Anthony Davis has led the New Orleans Pelicans to the fourth seed in the Western Conference after Boogie has gone down, with Rajon Rondo getting serious minutes, Drew Holiday getting serious minutes.
Drew Holiday is good, man.
Drew Holiday is damn good.
I will not allow Drew Holiday slander.
I will not. I'm not even trying to slander Drew Holiday, but it's like the stat lines that Anthony Davis has put it up recently. If he can drag that Pelicans team to a four seed, to home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs in the Western Conference, the conference that we say is the best conference in basketball, that has the Warriors, the Rockets, the Spurs, the Thunder, like all these teams, if he can drag them to the four after Boogie goes down, man, that he deserves some consideration for the Most Valuable Player award. Literally, James Harden added Chris Paul like a how many time All-Star. Like, I don't know. I'm just Boogie. I mean, Anthony Davis is doing it basically alone at this point.
I hear you. It's a very tight race that basically two games separates the third and the eighth seed. Three games separate the Portland Trailblazers, and they're running out of time, so there are not many games left, but there's three games between the Trailblazers at three and the Clippers at nine out of the playoffs. So, right, I agree. Pelicans are, it's crazy that they're the fourth seed right now. They lose a couple of games and they're out of the playoffs. And it might come down to that, but look, the Rockets are right now the top seed. They're going to finish one or two. There's almost no chance for them to finish outside of number two unless they completely fall apart. And James Harden is the leading scorer in the NBA. And he's a guy that I think people are looking at last year and looking at Russell Westbrook and the chase for triple doubles this year and being like, yeah, maybe we gave him a little too much credit. So I think Harden's going to get that bump, and he's definitely going to be the MVP.
That's exactly why he needs to lose, because it'd just be hilarious, because people still think he deserves the MVP against Steph. And so if he lost three MVPs in a row where people really thought he deserved it, personally, that's comedy gold. And everyone knows that like comedy is best in threes and trilogies are important. So I think we need the third act of the James Harden runner-up.
All right, sure. On Oscar night, well, actually, I was going to make a Susan Lucci joke, but she's more of an Emmy person. Anyway.
Does Jay King have any idea who Susan Lucci is?
Probably not.
Never heard of the broad.
We're going to move forward. All right. The Al Horford haters were out in force last night because Al Horford had a not great game. He had a bad game.
Bad game.
He shot 4 of 12, and he only took one three and missed that one. The minus 22, 10-point game, not a good game. And then at the end, missed an opportunity. He missed a couple of opportunities late to give the Celtics a lead, to get the Celtics tied. And then when he was on the ground, instead of just calling a timeout, he tried to make a pass. Brad Stevens was saying he was trying to call a timeout, but they didn't hear him, and Horford turned it over. That was bad. That's probably Horford's worst game of the season. But so what ends up happening is all of the Horford haters just climb like roaches out of the walls. Like when Al Horford's having all-star caliber performances during the first part of the season, no one's saying a thing. But now Al Horford comes out and struggled since the All-Star break, for sure. He has absolutely struggled since the All-Star break. And he had his worst game of the season last night against the Rockets. And now all of a sudden people want to come flying out of the woodwork. I woke up this morning to tweets from Lou Maloney about something I didn't even write, but just coming in off the top rope trying to be like, oh, look how much Al sucks. So I just want to just give a big middle finger to you guys because it's just... Like we get it. We get it. Like, Al Horford's raw numbers, you want to look at how many points he averages, whatever, and you want to make your point, fine, whatever. Make your point. I know. I see it. I know that he's struggling since the All-Star break. We all know that he's struggling since the All-Star break. He definitely needs to step it up. Whatever's going on, and I hope it's not a personal issue. I hope it's just the thing. He's just a phase that he's going through, like most players go through these phases. But, like, If you're not willing to, like, Lou Maloney specifically said right away, I didn't even watch the game. That's what he said. He said, I had no power. I didn't watch the game.
That's obnoxious.
Isn't it? Isn't that totally fucking obnoxious? He said,
that's
I didn't
the whole
watch
problem,
the game.
Though, is he doesn't watch the games.
Right.
He doesn't watch Celtics games whatsoever.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing. And people, and I know, Sam, you got to take, there are, If you're not watching the games, and I feel like this is the line of delineation. This is like I've called Al Horford the Mason-Dixon line of the NBA. Like if you are of the opinion that like Al Horford sucks, like you're below the Mason-Dixon. Like that's just you're not watching. You're not really. You can't grasp any nuance to basketball beyond how many times you shoot the ball and it goes in the hoop. Then that's fine. That's where you live. If you go above that and you look at what he's doing and understand his impact and his on-off numbers are generally amazing and he's been in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year and all of those things, like if you don't get that stuff, then or if you do get that stuff, then great. Welcome to the North. You're one of us. So, and people will accuse us of you know, whatever.
I love that you've equated average Al Horford with slavery.
I just figured the Mason-Dixon line was like the best way to like, because it's just so egregious. Like you've got to be like so like if you it's I don't know. I guess whatever.
The thing that's so frustrating is this. Like I know. Lou doesn't watch the games. Like
no, he doesn't. Of course he doesn't.
There was Red Sox spring training today. The guy is obsessed with baseball. Like I'm sure if I wanted to ask him like how Mookie Betts' second at bat was, Lou, perfect guy to tell me like what he saw out there. But I just know for a fact that he doesn't watch Celtics games. He said he doesn't watch Celtics games. It's just the most intellectually lazy take there is. And it's so like you can just seize the minus 22 and he can just immediately throw out average Al. But I didn't see him complain about Kyrie last night, who was like just as bad. It just comes from such a place of ignorance and what I see is the worst in sports talk radio, where I just know I'm going to say this to because it's going to piss people off, and I don't really even have to make a coherent argument or be logical. It's just stupid. It's like it's the same thing Adam Jones does on freaking Sports Hub. That guy, I know he's like, he does it for a bit, and it's like, I'm going to be so absurdly negative that it's like, it's funny, and it's just like not a, it's not a very funny bit. I'm not insulted as a Celtics fan. I'm insulted as a guy, as a comedian, I guess. It's just like, it's lazy.
Sam Packard, just, comedian. Insulted comedian.
That's basically what I what you guys both have, like, credentials. And before the show, that's why you call me the great before in the intros, Jay, because I don't have any credentials you can list. So
Sam Jam Packer the Great, man. That's the only credential you need.
That's exactly. So, like, I'm here to get jokes off. And so if Adam Jones is coming with that weak shit, I'm going to say something. And it's just, like, intentionally speaking to make people upset. And it just shows it's not productive discussion whatsoever. So I reject Adam Jones and I reject Lou Maloney, because when I used to produce for that show, I would have to come in and, like, tell him and Christian what happened in the Celtics games. When they had Celtics guests on, I would have to write out questions. Like, I know these guys don't watch the games, so it's extremely frustrating to see them, like, just have these absurd takes just for the thrill of it all. I just to piss people off. I don't know.
I'm gonna reel this back into basketball talk a little bit.
Ooh, well done.
So Al Horford, obviously he's struggled since the All-Star break. I don't think that's a big deal. He's had a decade of being Mr. Reliable. He's had a decade of doing all the same stuff. He's had a season plus last year's playoffs of being a super accurate three-point shooter. That's not going to change all of a sudden. He'll be fine. One thing I do think is that the Rockets, because they switch and because they have, like, big, strong guys, whether it's Harden or Tucker or if Capella's on him, they have guys who can guard. They can guard down low and they can guard up top. So Al Horford is kind of like the king of secondary playmakers, right? Like, he's not a guy who's going to break down a defense by himself, but if someone draws some attention and he faces a closeout, he's the king of, like, using someone's motion against him, beating a closeout, making a play, always making the right play. With the Rockets, because they switch so much and because they have so many guys who can guard inside and out with strength, it feels like Horford's not as much of a mismatch against them as he is against a lot of teams. Like, most teams, you switch someone on a Horford, and Horford's like, okay, well, I'm going to take you to the post, and that's cool. I'll just obliterate you. I'll do one of my two post moves that I've patented perfectly well and use awesomely. But, like, Tucker, it's tough to move Tucker. It's really hard to move Tucker on the block. Ariza is 6'8 and super long and athletic. So I do feel like the Rockets can be a bad matchup, and teams like the Rockets that have so many kind of versatile defenders who aren't necessarily overwhelmed either by his speed outside, like a lot of big men are, or his strength and size down low, like a lot of smaller guys are. So I do think it's kind of a tough matchup for him. And that's not necessarily going to be, like, his game against the Rockets.
I will say that. I mean, look, he's missed. Last night he missed a ton of makeable shots. So it's, yeah, I see where your point is. But he did have open shots. And he front-rimmed a lot of things. And I think that he looks, for lack of a better term, tired. Like, he looks like he's kind of just not his usual self to me. So I don't know. Maybe some of it's the matchup, but I saw open shots last night. I saw opportunities for him to score, and he just missed a lot of those. So maybe, but I think that there's something more to Al Horford's struggles. It's not just been Houston. It's been the past few games. It's been the entire post All-Star. But maybe he shouldn't have been an All-Star. Maybe it would have been best if he kind of, like, had a phantom back injury and he just spent the week, you know, back home in the Dominican or something. But I don't know. Right now, something clearly is wrong with Al Horford, and he's just not playing well. So
if you look at these games since All-Star break, I don't think he's been atrocious. He hasn't even played that much. If you look at, he only played 23 minutes against Memphis, only 21 minutes against Charlotte. I thought he had a decent game against the Knicks. He put up 13 points, 10 rebounds. He struggled to score against the Pistons, but also only played like 25
minutes. And he also helped dominate Blake Griffin defensively.
Yeah, he's still a very solid defensive player, the captain of the defense, the main communicator, and is like a main cog in the offense. I just don't – like, yes, his shooting has been down, but I just – he hasn't – like, I don't think it's woe begone. It's just like we should be worrying about Al Horford. I think, what, they only play two games in this upcoming week. He's going to get enough rest. I don't know. I agree with Jay that I think it's a bad matchup. He really excels when he can kind of play against guys who are bigger than him. But the Rockets are so good at going, I guess, four around one against Clint Capella. Clint Capella is just really fucking good. Like, he's a big dude who can kind of dominate Horford that way. So if you want to go small against the Rockets, it's kind of a tough choice on the defensive end of playing Horford against Capella. But Jay's right. Like, that's how you would get the most advantage on offense, is trying to get like someone taller, unlike PJ Tucker, out there. So I agree it's a tough matchup, but I'm really not worried about Al Horford. I still think he's going to be the major player for this team moving forward. And right now he just happens to be a down streak, specifically, I guess, shooting threes or being more aggressive. But I don't know. I'm not worried about him. I'm just too much in the Kaizen to be kind of focused on these past results.
Yeah, it's especially tough when you look at plus 12 against the Pistons, plus 13 against the Knicks, plus 27 against the Hornets. Like, he's still Al. He hasn't made as many of his shots lately, but he'll be fine. One other thing that I was surprised by against the Rockets, probably the thing I was most surprised by against the Rockets, Greg Monroe getting the backup big man minutes. And Brad Stevens kind of turning to him instead of Daniel Tice, who was available. I was shocked by that, first of all, and then Monroe was great. Monroe, like, against those switches, the same switches, Horford doesn't have the same kind of low post game or strength to beat. Monroe just obliterated that. So
yeah,
they kind of used him they weaponized him against the switches, which was cool.
Yeah, it was nice. It was very unexpected, but Brad Stevens put him in there early and it worked, and he just stuck with it and was very much rewarded. And look, it's hard to say exactly what Monroe is going to be moving forward, but I think we've started to see a little bit of progression. He feels more comfortable. It goes along with the rest of the bench, him, Rozier, Marcus Morris. But Monroe is a really good offensive player. He can move. He's got good feet.
He can wait. Say that again.
He can move.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that take.
In the post?
That might be the most controversial thing I've ever heard.
When attacking, he beat Nene Hilario off the dribble six times.
Right. Like, he can't move in the post?
I mean, he's got moves.
It's just semantics, Jay. Semantics.
He ain't the most mobile guy. No, but
I'm not talking about him sliding side to side on defense. I'm talking about him in the post.
Yeah, he's got good footwork. Great footwork. We'll agree on the footwork.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. We'll agree on the footwork. What's cool about Monroe is he's very different than Daniel Tyson, Aaron Baines. And so Brad just has I've called him a new toy, and it kind of seems like he is a new toy. Like, oh, let's see what we can do against these switches. Let's see if Monroe can just pulverize them down low, because they like to put wings on big men. And he did. And, you know, sometimes he'll go to Tice for catching lobs and guarding the perimeter. And sometimes he'll go to Baines for rugged interior, massive hulk of a human. So it's just like three quality, or at least competent big men, solid big men, and they do totally different things. So it's just more tools for Brad Stevens to utilize.
Greg from Moose coming in clutch. I agree. No, he's been doing, I think that's why you kind of have to think positively about the Celtics moving forward, is their best lineup is probably Al Horford at the five, but when they go away from that, they have kind of a Swiss Army knife of options to try and match up different lineups, and it's really going to depend on matchups. And I have faith in Brad Stevens to kind of just choose the right one. I don't understand why Aaron Baines got 12 minutes last night. Like, he got his six at the first half and six in the second half. Jay King, in the preview podcast, you said he would be underutilized, but I don't even know what he was like running him out there for. It feels like they could have just given all 12 minutes to Tice or Greg Monroe. Baines, like, in that matchup, Baines didn't make any sense.
More Baines slander, man. Just more Baines slander. But I want to go back to Corrales' point that Greg Monroe is a freak athlete. He did have one play that was amazing. It was like he recovered to make a block, and he kind of got off the ground a little bit, and he blocked it. They called him for a foul, but I hadn't seen the Moose move like that. So it was neat to see the Moose move like that. The Moose, that was his best game yet with the Celtics. All-around game. I know he pulverized Hernan Gomez a few nights earlier, but considering the competition, considering how much he was forced to defend against the Rockets and how they can hurt you, Monroe is really good. He's really, the last couple of games, turned things around after struggling before that.
Moose can move, goddammit. Moose can move. Freak athlete. Never see a Moose run?
Freak athlete.
I spent a lot of time in Maine, and I've seen plenty of Moose run, of course.
Yes. Moose can move in the post. I will stick to that. And look, the passing, which I've liked to highlight, he had that pass to Rozier in the second half was crazy. I think he has. I think Brad Stevens has another option now with Monroe, and it's just going to be interesting to see how he utilizes him. And there may be matchups moving forward where Monroe just isn't the guy, and it's going to be, you know, painfully clear. He does not have good lateral movement. Let me clear myself up there, Jay. But he's a freak. Against certain players, it may not work defensively, and it's going to be a problem. But I think it'd be interesting to see how Brad Stevens starts to use him now. And does he use him with Al Horford more? Does he use him instead of Al Horford more? We'll see moving forward.
Greg from Freak from Moose from Greg.
Before we go, I do want to talk about the last Marcus Smart play a little more. I know we mentioned it earlier. I'm fascinated by the fact that the Celtics needed a three. They needed a three to tie, and they decided to throw it to the worst three-point shooter in the entire world.
But the best tight end in the league.
That's what I'm saying.
Jump ball receiver in the league.
That's what I'm saying, and it made sense. It made all the sense in the world because they had 2 seconds left, and they knew for a fact that Marcus Smart was going to catch the inbounds pass. It didn't matter what he had to do. He would have maimed Chris Paul. He would have thrown Chris Paul through the freaking rafters. He would have taken Clint Capella, swung him around, smacked Chris Paul in the jaw. Like, he would have done whatever he needed to do to catch that inbounds pass, and he was going to get up a damn shot. And that's just kind of what he did. He was the Antonio Gates. He was Rob Gronkowski. He was whatever tight end you want to throw out there, just boxing out to make a play in the end zone. And it was fascinating. And it was so funny because there was no chance anyone else but Marcus Smart was going to get that ball. And he almost made the damn thing.
I thought it was going in.
I screamed. I thought it was in. It was wild. And I remember watching the play and go, like, what is Brad going to do now? And then I just saw Marcus Smart at the free throw line, like, with his ass in Chris Paul. And just been like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, just give it to that guy, because he was going to go up. And watching the replays, like, he's going to be at the highest point and physically dominate his opponent. Post Officer Smart. He was just like, his return, he was doing some great things just outside of that last play of drawing fouls on Harden, just being a nuisance, just – anything he does in the post, whether it's on defense or offense, or he can just be as physical as possible, it's where he excels. And it's just never going to come up in the stat sheet, but goddamn, it's fun to watch.
All right, let's wrap this up with a quick, big Australian boat.
Oh, so much fun on a boat.
The boat.
It's still terrible.
Greg Monroe is getting in the boat, man.
Greg Monroe is definitely first up on the boat. That, look, past couple, like, he's had consecutive games. My favorite thing is, before he had the past two games, people were tweeting at me like, when are you going to, like, let this Monroe thing go? And then all of a sudden he goes off and has two great games. Like, chill out. Let this guy kind of get used to the team, to what he's expected to do. Like, and he'll probably have another bad game somewhere mixed in there, but come on, man. Let it work. Let it ride. Let Brad Stevens do his thing.
Yeah, welcome to the boat, Moose. Take a look around. It'll probably be, hopefully, not your first trip, but he definitely deserves it. I mean,
Greg,
you can't put up
row, row, row the boat.
Boo this man.
Boo that man.
That was so bad. I'm ashamed.
It was
all
right, very
second,
bad.
Second person on the boat, I think, has to be Kyrie Irving, just for his absurd performance against the Charlotte Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he just absolutely dominated and was, 13 of 18 and just insane and knocking down some of the craziest shots I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
his whole post-All-Star break deserves everything.
He should be on there if only for the shake and bake over Kemba at the end of the shot clock.
Oh, yeah. That was wild.
That was, yeah. Kyrie has to be on there. I'm going to go with Terry Rozier, man.
Tito.
Terry Rozier.
Yeah. Third of his name.
He's just double digits every single night. Yeah, he's shooting all like 46, 47% from three-point range since over his last 13 games. He's just knocking down everything. He's given the bench a totally new dynamic, which is a really good shooter. And he's rolling right now. Tito's been really good.
Tito, 3 of 3 from 3 last night, 7 of 10 overall, 70% shooting. Post All-Star break numbers, 14 points a game, 52% from the field, 52.2% from 3, just dominating, shooting the lights out. He's averaging just about 3 assists a game, less than a turnover. He's playing well, and since the All-Star break, a plus 7 on the floor. So Tito is smoking it. Marcus Morris, Mook.
Absolutely.
Mook and Moose, both Mook. On the all. Yeah, absolutely. Morris was a killer in that game last night. He was the Celtics team leader, scoring 21 points last night, 8 of 13 from the field, 5 of 7 from the three. He was just crazy.
He was just hitting everything. Three ball after three ball. And you know what was an important play, I thought, and a play that kind of shows how he's progressed. The offensive rebound, where he went in and he chased after it, and he made a great hustle play and kind of jumped over someone to tap it out. I don't think he could have done that earlier in the year. I don't think he was mobile enough. I don't think he was healthy enough. And after the knee issues, I think the knee issue kind of hurt him a lot more than people understood and people gave him credit for. The last few weeks, he's been looking a lot different athletically, and you can just see him getting better and better as the season progresses. And he still does some wild, wild shit. Don't get me wrong. Marcus Morris will forever do some wild shit.
ISO Mook.
But
it's important.
But his wild shit has a better chance of succeeding when he's a lot more athletic. And also, he is hitting spot-up Jays, a lot of spot-up trays, so Marcus Morris, very deserving of a spot on Aaron Baines' boat.
My favorite play last night, I think, from him was, it was Monroe trying to post up, and he kept getting pushed further and further out until Monroe was, like, past the three-point line, and Mook was just like, fuck it, I'm going to shoot. And he just drills the three. It was just, like, beautiful. Anybody else on the boat? I'm going to put Jaylen Brown. Can we put Jaylen Brown on the boat?
I think it's going to be strictly for intellectual contributions.
Absolutely.
Because I was just looking at his stats, and they don't deserve it.
Look, last night, he started out hot last night. People need to understand, he started out hot. In that first quarter, he had, crazy crossover on the right wing, and then he came right back and hit a three. Like, he was starting to cook, and then he got a bunch of fouls, and he was in foul trouble, and I think that screwed with him last night. I thought that Brown, if he had stayed out of foul trouble, was on his way to a big game last night. But obviously the big thing to put Brown on the boat for was the Harvard speech. Like, that's that was the big, that might be the most important thing the Celtics have done this week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That,
and like, yeah, man, the boat's not just for the play on the court. The boat is for a judgment of your entire character. So if you're going to go and drop some knowledge, come on. The boat's got to be entertaining. We should have our own soiree where Jalen will speak there.
Get some nice glasses of wine, you know?
Yeah.
Have a nice intellectual conversation.
He could teach a seminar at the boat.
There you go. He could probably teach us how to tie some knots. I bet he knows how to do that. He knows everything.
Knows everything. He's a smart guy. All right. That's going to be the show. That's it. We're done. We're clearly toast. There's nothing else to say. So let's just wrap things up. Again, if you are not a subscriber, please subscribe. Search for Locked On Celtics Podcast wherever you get your podcast, whatever it is. We're everywhere. Like, we're literally on everything. And if that's not actually literally true, tell us and we'll make it literally true. And if you are a subscriber, a 5-star rating, a good review helps us a lot and pushes us up the rankings and all of that stuff. And then share, spread the word, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your enemies, tell random people on the street to listen to us. We're the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.